Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Inatech.
No, you're working at Inatech because that question is bullshit to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world and I am a material girl. Or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Well, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do
If I had $1 million, if I had
Warm up, Mr. Jacks, after now, he's Mr. Matt Weber on the board. We have Mr. Brennan Cornan back in two marathons. He got him up to 100 marathons, and he's a star of a
very impressive
stage and screen. We were on Channel 7 last week.
Yeah, that was a good little piece.
S&P futures up 975. Dow futures up 101. NASDAQ futures up 23. We got some pretty good earnings out of Johnson & Johnson's up $2. That's in the Dow. So that's 16 points of the Dow. J.P. Morgan Chase shares are also up. So we've got good start to the earnings season. People can do better than what they told you they were going to do. Imagine that, Brendan. Just saying. So how do you... It was nice. How was Berlin?
Berlin was wonderful. It was a little bit warmer than it was here in Chicago over the weekend. It was raining a good part of the race, so that was a little uncomfortable, but overall it was a good day.
Like pouring rain or drizzling rain?
There were a couple of heavy downpours in the middle of the race, but for the most part it was more like what the Irish refer to as a soft rain.
Ah.
You're familiar with the term, aren't you, Chief?
Yes. I actually ran a 5K way back in Da Day in Beverly, the Ridge Run.
The Ridge Run. And, yeah, 5K and a 10K there on Memorial Day.
Well, it was Memorial Day. The weather was awful, as in, like, under 50, windy, had rained the entire night. It was one of those brutal Memorial Day weekends that we seemed to have had. We had a stretch up there for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And so all the good runners from the CBOE floor, guys that, you know, ran marathons and stuff, all decided that they could go with the sweats halfway into the race. And I had just, Gore-Tex had just come out.
Mm-hmm.
And I bought this, you know, this Gore-Tex jacket that now we'd look at it and say, I mean, you know, they only last a couple of washes and then they, you know, they weren't Gore-Tex anymore. But anyway, I had that on a pair of shorts. It starts raining. All these guys in their sweats are dying. They were way better runners than me. The run back from 111th down to 95th on Longwood Drive or whatever it was, 107th, the rain not only was coming down so hard, it was coming right at you. I was absolutely, I don't know how I stopped. I thought my contact lenses were going to wash out. It was that bad. It was like being in a shower. I get to the finish line, and all you saw was people's clothes all over the place and everything. And anybody that had any kind of piece of clothing on that could pick up any water, I don't even think they finished it. It was just brutal.
Oh, yeah.
So how do you horrible. Do yeah, how you would do a marathon when it was raining? You know, obviously, you guys got the good stuff, but still.
Yeah, the clothes are much better now than they were back then because cotton just attracts water, and you can easily triple the weight of clothing, yeah, or quadruple the weight of the clothing while you're running. And it also chafes a lot more when cotton is wet. You didn't see very many people out there with cotton stuff over the weekend.
No.
Or in Berlin. You're right, though. The technical fibers now are really, really good. And even in cold, well, when I ran in Antarctica, I had I dressed like I do here in the wintertime on the lakefront path.
Well, if you ever read Butkus's book, it said the Bears were so cheap they wouldn't get the new style jerseys.
Mm-hmm.
So they played some exhibition game in a pouring rain, and he and Doug Buffon took his jersey off, and they dropped it on the scale after the game, and it was like 24 pounds or something. He goes, we're running around in this thing. No wonder we couldn't move.
Yeah.
But, well, congratulations to you. Well,
thank you very much.
Well, you missed all kinds of crazy stuff going on here. The Fed doing their thing. The market's up this morning.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think with the Fed is going to do their best to hold the market up for like a while.
Yeah. How low is the Fed going to go?
This is pretty unbelievable. There's some problem in the system. With all the money they've poured in there, there's still problems with the overnight repos, that the Fed funds market is not running. And so I don't know if they're doing it specifically to bail out one person or whatever, but I will say this, and this is, I mean, we talk about it on this show all the time, and we have, I'll say, an unusual group of listeners, I think, that actually have a pretty good idea of what we're talking about. But I was on Joan Esposito's show yesterday as a guest, and she's on 820. It's a regular show for, like, for, I'm going to say, for regular people, forever, whatever that means, right? They have me on maybe once a week to talk about some of this economic stuff. So yesterday, she said, what does it even mean when the Fed means something like this? And I said, well, it means that they're going to essentially make $60 billion a month and buy stuff. And she's like, what do you mean by make? And I said, well, here's, I'll work through the process. If the Treasury, if they want to have money for the federal government, they're going to go out and borrow it from you, me, from an insurance company, whoever, right? They're going to sell a bond, which means they're borrowing that money from you for 10 years, 30 years, 6 months, whatever it happens to be. Now, that's in the system. You don't really create any money because the money comes out of your bank account and goes into theirs, right?
Right.
So now the Fed comes in and says, well, that's not what we're looking for. We need to put money in the system. So they'll go out and buy that bond, say, from you or the insurance company or me in the open market and put the money right back in the system. They've essentially made up the money and put it in there. So it's a two-step process. And I said, Joan, I love you, but even you or Caesar, nobody gives the right to a president anywhere to just whenever you want to, you know, whenever you want to spend money, just go in a back room and print it up and do it. Yet, that's essentially what's being done. It's just a two-step process. And she goes, nobody understands that. And sure enough, we go to break, comes back, she goes, we've got like boards lighting up. You got to go through that again. Nobody has any idea about it. It essentially is it's a make money two-step process. I go, it is.
Mm-hmm.
And where does it end? I mean, I went through yesterday the CPI thing from last week, and I looked at, I'm still astounded that if you look at the medical care part, it's like 7%. If you added back some other little line, it might actually be 8%. But last year, they had the increase in medical stuff was 4.4%. So if you took, say, the 7.5 and made it 20, which is really what it is in society, and did the math, the 1.7% CPI last year would be 2.2, just if you made the adjustment in that one area. And that doesn't count the college tuition part or the fact that what percentage of the tuition in the country do you think, or what percentage of education is essentially buried in property taxes, which aren't in the index?
A lot are, because of the public school system is supported by property taxes.
Right. So you've got, you're not counting the medical enough. You don't count property taxes, and they've got cost of education is like 7% of somebody's budget, which is, if you count, even if you go to public school, if you add the property taxes back in, or at least, I'm going to say at least half the property taxes are for schools.
Probably more than that in a lot of districts.
I think 55% or something.
I think in Chicago it's closer to 2/3.
Okay. I mean, suburbs, I thought they were in the mid-50s, but I could be wrong. Mm-hmm. But still, it's over somewhere
it's
between.
It's still a lot of money.
It's still a lot of money.
A high percentage of what you're paying in your property taxes.
Right, so that's not in the CPI. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then you're saying cost of other education is, I got to believe somebody who puts somebody through private school. Now, of course, they're paying twice. They're paying for the...
Right, they're paying for the private education as well.
Even if you don't count that, the private education has got to be more than 7% of somebody's income.
Yeah, it's increased dramatically.
I mean, even grammar school and high schools are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah. So, Brennan,
well, I would have been hard pressed to put 4 kids through Catholic grammar school and high school. All my kids went to Catholic grammar school, and 3 out of the 4 went to 4 years of Catholic high school. My other daughter went to 1 year at Mother Macaulay, and then 3 years out at Lincoln Way. So there was a little bit of a free ride, but it was getting expensive.
Oh yeah, well, and you can't deduct it.
No, that's just money that, from a tax standpoint, you're throwing away.
So, Brennan, you're coming in cold on this, but yesterday we had one of the most bizarre deep down arguments I think we've ever had on the show, worse than the gold episode. And it has to do with, somehow this weekend I was doing some research on this phone call with the Ukraine, and I'm trying not to pick a side. I just went through it, and you could have knocked me over with a feather. And this is my entire, and I was getting emails yesterday till 4 o'clock yesterday. About, I'm part of the big lie. I'm part of the deep state. I'm not any of those things, I don't think, but you tell me, is somebody who's just,
I don't think you're part of the deep state.
No. Where is the deep state? I don't even know how you get on the,
I don't even know what the deep state is, but, I know you're not part of it.
Well, do I have to be able to get on the deep internet or the dark web first? I don't know how to do that.
I don't either.
I don't either.
We'll have to have Kevin show us how to do that, if he knows how to do it. But if he doesn't know how to do it, I bet he's got guys.
I'm sure he got guys. He tweeted out a pretty cool article. A couple of his students won a hackathon contest hosted by AT&T. Some of his tech students are pretty bright guys. I guarantee Kevin has some knowledge on the dark web.
I wonder if
one of
those guys
web.
To hack into Kevin.
They may already be hacking into Kevin and changing their grades.
They may already have, and he doesn't know
he
it yet.
He probably doesn't even know yet.
But it's a pretty cool story that I encourage everyone to check it out. We just tweeted it out.
Anyway, what got me on this subject is when Joan asked me to be on the show yesterday, she wanted me to research what the impeachments have done to the market before. So, of course, I dug back into the Nixon, and that's when I ended up with this article about how they do these phone calls. And I'm going to ask you, Brendan, because in the back of my mind, there's been this debate going on about this Ukrainian phone call with the whistleblower and the impeachment and all this crap. And I'm just sitting there going, the transcript, and they don't believe the transcript. And this guy, the whistleblower, says this, and the whistleblower said, you know, that they mentioned Biden's kid four times, and then the transcript, you know, says one time, and all this, and it, back and forth, back and forth. And I'm just thinking, why don't they just listen? Why doesn't somebody just listen to the tape?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, it turns out there is no tape.
Have the tapes been suspended? No, I thought all of those tapes were supposed
how
to be.
How does a guy like you, now it's easy for me, just a schlump sitting here, my money manager schlump kind of guy, is it, we're a big time attorney working for the biggest people on earth from the schmo and furl law firm. There have not been tapes since the 70s, since Nixon got thrown in office because of a tape.
Hmm.
Now, if you can believe this, now I have no reason to think that this article is not correct. So say president like Trump gets on the phone with the guy at the Ukraine. Now this is a real call. This isn't the two of them walking in the Rose Garden or Camp David, you know, where you would think you would keep private stuff, but This is a real call. You know, so Pompeo's on it, the head of SA's on it, I don't know if the Defense Department guy's on it. We got all kinds of guys on our end, and they probably do on their end, right? So the phone call is populated, shall we say.
Uh-huh.
In the bowels of the White House, in the Situation Room, there are two, I think, guys, might be ladies, sitting there. And whenever Trump says something, they allegedly repeat what he said word for word into a, what do you call a machine where you talk into it and it spits out the text? There's a name for it. It's like they use on TV.
A dictaphone?
No. what's the name for it, Manny? Whatever.
I missed what you said.
I said, when you talk into a machine and the machine prints out what you said, what's the name of that machine?
A stenographer or a stenograph?
Something like that, yeah. Well, so the person repeats word for word what Trump said, and then the other person reads word for word what the Ukrainian guy says. So they're talking.
Oh, so the translator.
The translator's probably over in Ukraine. I don't know. But I think he's talking in English, I believe. So say it's Boris Johnson, okay, and it's both in English. One guy's talking Well, one guy is repeating word for word what Trump said, and the other guy's repeating word for word what Johnson said. In this machine, that pops out a written copy. But it's not like a court reporter where they're taking down every word, typing it or whatever. So then they look at the copy and they edit the copy. Okay? Uh-huh. Then it goes somewhere else. So I'm going, I never dreamed that there wasn't a tape, and that every single president, left or right, you know, because it's always got to be one or the other side, left or right, since 1975, said, we don't want no stinking tapes. Look what happened to this guy having tapes.
Mm-hmm.
I you know what? I'm sitting there, why don't these idiots just listen to the tape? Well, there is none. So now, if you're on one side, you're supposed to believe that this thing is word for word. And if you're on the other side, the whistleblower side, you're going, obviously these guys screwed with it because the whistleblower said they mentioned the guy six times or five times or four times. And this was my entire point, is that all of a sudden I can't believe that this thing, A, can't be believed and there's no tapes. And yet now we're just, this debate is over he said, she said. Because nobody really has the thing down verbatim unless somebody somewhere had his phone hooked up to a tape machine.
Well, there's also the other piece of this is reading the words of the text, whether you believe that there was a request to help out for a political appointment, or was this just the president doing business because of corruption, and how you interpret what the words said. Even the words that have been released in the transcript
right.
are up for debate as to what they mean. What does "is" mean?
Well, it's Clinton, yeah. But I don't get the idea that you can't go to the source. And haven't been able to for 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
I just call me shocked. Mm-hmm. I don't know, it doesn't leave me anywhere in terms of what I believe, who's right or wrong.
Mm-hmm.
It just means that we'll never figure it out.
That's correct.
I saw Maddie when
unless of course there's a tape currently sitting in Turkey.
Turkey or Russia. In Pompeo's office or somebody like that.
Yeah.
Or Russia or somewhere. You know, I wouldn't be a bit surprised if there isn't one someplace.
I wouldn't be surprised at that either.
Boy, that would be something. But I was telling Maddie that when I was on the board of the SIBO, we'd have the meetings, and then the next meeting, the first thing you'd do is approve the minutes of the last meeting.
Mm-hmm.
You read these things, they're 2 pages long, the meeting could have been 5 hours, and you mm-hmm. wonder if you're in the same spot. Because somebody would take down all the stuff. I mean, Judy Deal, who actually knew shorthand, we'll talk about a name for the past, she would pretty much take down what everybody said.
Mm-hmm.
And, if you and I had a Pier 6 brawl about one of the days we had a big debate about guns on the trading floor.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about hilarious. It must have been 2 hours, Brendan. Back and forth.
And it was a two-sentence summary.
After some debate, this was voted for 8-2.
Mm-hmm.
I said, okay. If you looked at these minutes, you'd swore we went in there, had a cup of coffee, scrambled for lunch and left at like 9:30.
Well, there's a reason for that, and
yeah.
the reason for that is that oftentimes the board members of any corporation, not just the SIBO, but of any corporation, don't want a big discussion as to what really transpired or the back and forth or the contention on difficult issues.
And they would never tell you who voted for what.
No,
if it was 15-2, they'll never tell you the two were.
Mm-hmm. Now, a lot of public agencies, a lot of cities, municipalities, and public agencies do that. They will do a roll call vote and will list who voted yes, who voted no. Oftentimes, though, it's a voice vote, like at City Council. If you go to the Chicago City Council and listen to their votes, it'll often be all in favor say aye, and you hear, rah, all opposed, and nothing. So the ayes have it. And that's how it goes in the record, that the motion carried. But the reason for that is that you don't want a lot of discussion in the record that can be used later on. Now, that can be used for you or against you in your position, but you don't want to take the risk that it's going to go against you.
Well, and if you were the one no vote, they would actually say, we really would like this to be unanimous. Could we vote again?
Yeah.
I was the numb, imagine that, me being the one no vote a couple of times. You can vote again, but I'm still no.
Yeah.
But they wanted everything to be unanimous.
Yeah. And if it's not unanimous, at least vote present or something. Don't vote no.
I'm sure the Fed's the same way, but I mean, this is...
Well, it is, and that's why it's interesting seeing the Fed minutes that come out when they're disclosing that the votes are, you know, have one or two people against. And recently, you know, they may be against for other reasons. They may be, you know, there may be some who say, leave it where it is. There may be some who said, no, we need to lower it more or even raise it. But, you know, you're starting to see some dissent in the minutes, because they're not unanimous anymore.
What do you think? I mean, without, you know, leading the witness much here, this incredible amount of money the Fed's going to pour into the system again. I mean, Carl called me immediately and said, okay, we're going to finance essentially 3/4 of next year's deficit
mm-hmm.
with that money. Like I said, you wouldn't give Caesar that ability, much less Trump
mm-hmm.
or Obama or Warren or whoever the hell it is. Nobody, you would want that, but that's what we have now. So that means every single day there's $3 billion trickling in essentially to the market. Now, as a trader, it's very, when you see the markets up today, it's very, very difficult to fight that. I'm not saying you want to fight it, you don't want the market to go down, but it's very difficult to be. So we're talking about, we're making our bet that even though the economy is slowing pretty dramatically in some spots, I think. And I think people are getting overtaken by certainly taxes and other things. I honestly believe that this is going to be a watershed event. Can we keep asset prices up by pouring money in without having an inflationary situation? And I don't know. I think we already have an inflationary situation. We're just not counting it. But certainly in a lot of areas. But even the arable oil embargo, how long did it take for people to realize that was a general inflation and not just oil? It took a while. But it is interesting to see.
But the bet right now is that it will take at least 18 months before those effects are recognizable by the general public.
Right. Well, more, it only really need a year.
Yep.
13 months.
Mm-hmm.
And,
which also begs the question I was going to ask you is, you know, with the action by the Feds continuing to reduce rates or potentially continuing to reduce rates, is that really necessary right now? I mean, obviously they do that to stimulate the economy, which means the economy is...
Are they really? Are they just doing it to prop up asset prices?
Well, that's my question to you. What is the purpose for this? And if there is a downturn in the economy, how much room do they have to really pump up and stimulate the economy? Because, you know, a lot of the indicators are unclear whether the economy is really in significant danger. And even when those indicators look like they are going to have trouble for the economy, other factors are buoyant. So so really, what are they doing?
Do you want a Southside snippy version, or do you want the party line?
Give me both. Give me the Southside version first, and then give me the party line.
As two or three people on CNBC yesterday said that and you and I have mentioned on the show a couple times, the idea of people having money in society and doing well has somehow shifted from, it used to be people's income. I mean, if you go back and then any of the data, certainly when I was in college, probably all the way through the 80s and the 90s, you would constantly be talking about people's income and whether with their inflation versus income, those kinds of things. You were worried about the people at Pullman, if the inflation rate was 6%, getting at least a 6% raise and then staying steady. You're worried about your older savers that, you know, okay, the savings accounts are returning 8 because of the inflation 6 or 7.
Yep.
I'm staying ahead of the game. Somehow or another, and I don't know if it was part and parcel to smaller percentage of people having more and more, not only of the money, but of the assets.
Mm-hmm.
It came down to, we don't look at people's income anymore, especially median income. We don't want to look at that. We look at the wealth effect.
Mm-hmm.
And if the entire society has more wealth, okay, then everybody's doing well. Even though the idea that, I mean, what percentage of, I don't know, percentage of the country, but what percentage of wealth is there that all of a sudden every major league, you know, skittage team has got a tiddlywink team is worth $2 billion when they were worth, you know, $300 million 8 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But that's the kind of stuff that blows up when this happens.
Well, sure.
And so if you're looking at the wealth, the bet is being made that even if 80% of the population is income isn't going up, you know, a red one, the fact that everybody's, quote, houses went up 10% and the stock market goes up another 30%, or the price of major league ball clubs goes up, that somehow we can say the society is now wealthier than it ever has been and you're doing okay.
Yeah, but that's not true.
Well, I understand it. But that's what I'm saying, that there is a bifurcation. Mm-hmm. It's not about getting, you know, the person making buttons a $2 an hour raise. Mm-hmm. It's not even close to being about that anymore. The Fed is worried about the asset bubble.
Well, it's about the owner of the button company, the manufacturer of the button company, who's taking more profits at the end of
the year. Well, but I mean, not every small business is doing that. The big ones probably
are. No, I'm not talking about the small businesses that are doing that.
Well, hang on to that for a second. SP Futures up 9.25. Dow Futures up 106. NASDAQ Futures up 60. I'm Mr. Joel on Canada for the break.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holland. This is Brennan Cornett and Matt Weber on the board. Matt, this thing you just sent me, I'm going to have to read this quote now that you sent it to me. This is from John Adams. And as we talk about people screaming back and forth about things that are illegal or not illegal or it's not against the law and people are doing stuff that you and I might say. This is from John Adams. We have no government armed in power capable of contending in human passions and unbridled by morality and religion. Our Constitution was made only for a moral and religious people. It's wholly inadequate to the governor of any other. Interesting. In other words, if you're just looking for government to be a morality, good luck with that, is essentially what he's saying, right? Brendan, if there isn't some other kind of code that you're there saying, this is either right or wrong, if you start looking whether it's illegal or illegal, you start going where we are right now.
Another note that we got from Reese, who tweeted us, or actually emailed us on the website, he says, bless Chief, bless Maddie. Regarding our conversation yesterday about if you're a little dishonest about small things, you're probably dishonest about big things. He says, Luke 16:10, Whoever can be trusted with very little can also be trusted with much, and whoever is dishonest with very little will also be dishonest with much.
Well, I can't say that's where I got it from, but thank you.
Yeah.
Now, I see you as a Bible scholar, so I'm sure you have.
I'm surprised
that
Brendan exactly didn't say, well, I knew that. Or Manny Weber. We heard learned that in third grade. Yeah. S&P futures up 950, Dow futures up 91, NASDAQ futures up 20. Individual stocks, I mentioned Johnson & Johnson is up 256, and we have J.P. Morgan is up 210, so that's, well, that's $5, so that's 40 in the Dow right there. So around the rest of the world, we've got the European Union, we've got the DAX up 55.4, FTSE down 24.3, CAC ran up 32.6. Boris Johnson, one day he was in, now he's out, back with his Brexit. Nikkei up 408, it's 1.8%. Shanghai, however, down 16.6%. Hang Seng down 17, so that's sort of interesting. Bonds, 10-year 1.68. The Bund, minus 0.46. Japan, minus 0.17. Wow, these guys, they're making a creep towards zero. That'd be interesting, Brendan. That'd be real interesting. Oil, 53.02, that's down 57 cents. Brent, 58.87, down 48 cents. And we've got gold down up 80 cents, 14.98. Silver down 2 cents, not much going on there. Copper still 261. No indication that anything's going on in China. Maybe we got for us, Trevi Weather Sports.
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We have a couple of issues already this morning on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways. Looks like 130th Street at the Bishop Ford Freeway. There is an accident that's causing some delays as folks are getting on the Bishop Ford there at 130th. So keep that in mind on the south side. And then it looks like on I-90 westbound just before Cumberland, we have a crash that's causing stop-and-go traffic, so expect delays on I-90 heading outbound side near Cumberland. Everything else is looking okay out there. Weather today, it's going to be a beautiful day. Could have some showers later in the morning, but then we'll be partly cloudy skies. We warm up a little bit to 62, about 10 degrees warmer than we've been the last few days, so that'll feel nice. Right now it's mostly clear and 50 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 92 today. Right now it's clear and 66. In sports, the Blackhawks are on the board. They finally won a regular season game here for their, their third try, beating the Oilers last night 3-1. In baseball, the Nationals are one game away from appearing in the World Series for the first time ever. The former Montreal Expos and now the Nationals, they blew out the Cardinals last night 8-1 and lead that series 3-0. So they'll go for the sweep tonight in Washington. And in Monday Night Football, the Packers rallied back from 13 down to beat Joel's Lions 23-22. Chief.
So the Cardinals have their best pitcher out there. The guy gets roughed up in, I think, the second inning. The third inning, he comes back and mows him down, and they pull him for a pinch hitter.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, what are you guys doing? And of course, the pinch hitter doesn't get a hit. And
Were there guys on base when they put the pinch hitter?
No, they were going to do it no matter what. He was the second guy up.
Oh, yeah.
And what does this mean, Manny?
Not a lot of margin for error. You've got to score runs. They scored one last night. That's not going to get
They've only scored two in the series.
They've scored two in three games.
Somebody explain this to me, you guys that are more into this. Joel, I'll get you to say, WeWork alerts members that at least 1,600 of its office phone booths, I don't know who has a phone booth today, are tainted with formaldehyde. What the hell does that mean?
They do smell in those phone booths at WeWork. Maybe it is the formaldehyde.
What do you mean a phone booth? What do
they have a small office.
So there's no offices. It's all open workspace,
okay.
So it can get very loud. So if you need to take a call with a client where you don't want it loud in the background, they have all these little booths up and down the hallways where you can go in there, and it's big enough for one person to kind of sit in there quietly, and it's like a little booth.
Why would you have formaldehyde in there?
It's not the same kind of a phone booth we're used to seeing back in the day where it's on every corner where Superman runs into the change.
It's not like that.
Oh, I didn't think it was. I mean, I'm not that much of a
But I have no idea why there would be formaldehyde or whatever, however you say it.
We must have had some panels from somebody. Joel, how are you?
I'm doing well. I just want to make sure I called into the right radio station here. I thought I was calling Stocks and Jocks, and I heard you guys talking some literature, some Bible literature there.
One of our listeners went in talking about the Constitution, according to John Adams, was not designed to ride herd over a country that has no morals and no religion. It only works if people have essentially background morals.
Well, you know, that is also interesting because Pompeo and Barr over the weekend are talking about the secularization of the U.S. government and how that's a bad thing. Like, they have not heard about church and state separation.
Well, but I think the ideas are supposed to be separate, but you're not supposed to not go to church and not know the difference between right and wrong.
Well, it goes without saying that you should know the difference between right and wrong, and that's unfortunately why laws have to be made, and they're always made retroactively.
Well, but I mean, I think I would say that your laws work if one out of 1,000 people are bleep-ups. If one out of 5 people are bleep-ups, you got a problem.
That's true. That's true. And but it's, you know, the same thing like contracts. Everybody bemoans lawyers and contracts. But the idea behind a contract is once you sign the contract, you put it in a drawer and you don't have to look at it again until after the expiration of the contract. The contract is designed to provide gotchas. If you're not living up to what you told me you would live up to, then we go back and look at the contract and see what the consequences are.
Well, the question is Michigan living up to their potential in football? What happened to your Detroit guys last night?
Oh, boy, oh, boy. Well, first of all, I could barely keep my eyes open last night, so I missed the second half. My daughter got married on Saturday night, and
congratulations.
Still recovering a little bit, but you know, I heard about the calls, and I heard about, you know, the officiating, and I know that's part of the game, but I think it's just symptomatic of a bigger problem, and that's just sports, or, you know, the officials, the replays. I'm still interested. I still love my Michigan. I still can watch stuff, but it's just, it's getting to the point now where TV, my dad predicted over 30 years ago that TV would ruin sports, and it is. There's no continuity. I heard that there were several bad calls, but you kick 5 field goals in Green Bay, you're not going to win. You got to score touchdowns. So, you know what? You got to move on. We have Minnesota next week, and Minnesota looks good. So they beat Minnesota, and you forget about it. But
who's the new Monday night group? Who's the African-American color guy that went off on the referees last night? I've never heard anybody do that on.
Anthony McFarlane. Booger McFarlane.
Booger McFarlane.
He actually, you know, I'm not a huge fan of his delivery, but, you know, he actually says a few really good things throughout a broadcast if you watch him.
But he really jumps on what would be a very close call. The illegal hands of the face were, the guy comes in and the defensive guy has the tackle with one hand out, and he essentially is grabbing the inside of his front shoulder pad with hands, you know, knuckles on his neck and palm probably on the shoulder pad. And he just went off about, that's on the shoulder pad, it's not the face. It's a huge stiff arm where they had the guy straightened up, which I'm not so sure, you know, it was pretty darn close to his face. I mean, I don't know that. It was a touchy call, but whether it was a horrendous call like he was ranting and raving about, I don't think so. I mean, to me it looked like, I don't know, you wouldn't exactly teach anybody that technique. Now, it's not the same as having your hand under the guy's face mask, I get it, but it clearly was a little bit unusual, because he had the guy like totally backed up with it and stood up with it, so he was just going nuts. But is there
really been a good Monday Night Football announcer since Howard Cosell?
And Dandy Don.
Dandy Don having a few pops in the booth there. Come on, let's be honest.
I liked Deardorff.
I loved Al Michaels, and I grew up with Al Michaels, Dan Deardorff, and Frank Gifford, and they were good.
Yeah,
that was a great crew.
Yeah, they were good.
But it's really sucked for definitely the last 10 or 15 years.
You didn't like Gruden?
No. And then, I mean, he's better than this.
Well, I'm asking. I didn't like Gruden.
He's a lot better than this, than what we have now. And so is Mike Tirico. But still, not nearly as good as Al Michaels. And then you could put any schlub with Al Michaels, and it's going to be great. Uh-huh. But ESPN has just ruined Monday Night Football. I mean, it's horrible.
Turn out the lights.
Yeah, Sunday Night Football is now way better.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Go Michigan football, they got to start playing better. I mean, actually, I was watching that Illinois game while, you know, we were at the venue getting ready, and they have a point where you have to, you know, it's the first look after your daughter gets dressed and you're dressed and you go out there. So I'm watching the game. I'm like, okay, this is going to be easy. It's 28-0. So just they're like, Joel, you got to come and, you know, see Dana and stuff. They make it 28-23, yep. Then they make it at 28-25, and I walked out there, and my daughter, huge sports fan. She probably knows more sports trivia than you two guys put together. And she goes, Dad, what's the score? Oh, I'm like, oh, we're up, good. Meanwhile, it was 28-25. They had scored 25 answering points. They're just not. I just don't get Shea Patterson. You know, I just, I mean, there's no fluidity to the offense. We're not hitting the receivers, and 7.5-point underdogs at Penn State on the road, yeah, under the lights. I mean, another opportunity for Harbaugh to have a signature win, 1-9 against ranked teams. I mean, very, very disappointed. I'd like to see him step up, and this is the game. And then, Chief, when are you coming in to Ann Arbor a week from Saturday? What time are you going to arrive?
I will probably not be coming, but, hey, real quick question while you're Mr.
Sure.
The Fed, $460 billion a month. Is it like the song Convoy? Or we put the hammer down and just the market goes up for the next year, or are they too late to the party and this is getting to be old news?
What about the inverted yield curve, Chief?
We don't worry about that anymore.
Deep recession, then depression.
No, we don't worry about that.
Market, Fed, China, we're in a trading range, Chief, and we're kind of at the upper end of that trading range. So get over 3,000 in the S&Ps, you go up a test to high, you get anywhere in the lower 2,800. You look at this market's gone nowhere for 2 years. We're in a trading range. I know us traders don't love it, but that's the way it is. It's a trading range.
You guys are going to play Penn State and then the Irish. The Irish got this week off, I think.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, they
that's
do.
Nice. Yeah. No, two big weeks, man, for Michigan.
Well, if I were
on the road at Penn State's tough, I'll be happy if we go 1-1.
If I were to come your way, would I have a guy up there who could get me a good parking pass?
Chief, I have the ultimate parking situation for Michigan. If you went to a game with me, you would say there's not 115,000 people there. Back roads in. I got a parking spot across from the IM building. I go up before the first game. I give these kids like $400. I get 3 cell phone numbers, and it's right on Hoover. It's the main area everyone walks in. I got you. I get my spot for 40. I'll get it to you for 50.
Sounds like a deal, and it sounds like a yes for you.
Sounds like I got a guy in Michigan. I got a guy up there.
There you go.
You do. All right.
Joel, take care of yourself, buddy.
Go Blue.
That's a tough one at Penn State on the road.
Yeah. That's really tough. Penn State, who beat Iowa on Saturday night, and I watched that game in Iowa City, which is a tough place to play, and their defense is actually good this year. That's why Penn State's better. They've always had a really good explosive offense, but their defense in the last, 7 or 8 years under this Franklin guy has never been very good, and their defense is stacked. They're going to be a tough matchup for Michigan. And then, meanwhile, Notre Dame's resting up and has a bye week. That's not going to be an easy place win for Michigan either. I mean, they could easily go 0-2 these next two.
Oh, I mean, yeah.
Especially if they play the way they did against Illinois over the weekend.
Yeah, it was 28-0 at half, game over, and Illinois just caught fire in the second half. And if they didn't turn it over, I mean, they could have won that game.
Yeah. Does Illinois have anybody?
Lovie Smith.
I mean.
he's got to lose that beard.
Yes, he does.
It's not a great look.
No, does he have any 4-star guys? Was this the deal? He's supposed to start getting guys out of Texas because that's where he's from.
I can tell you, I don't follow Illinois football recruiting very closely. I don't think anyone does. There's maybe like 12 people that do, but I haven't seen a lot of big talented guys out of him. And this is what is this his third year or fourth year?
I think it's his fourth year.
I think it's his fourth.
So he's got
all of his guys there now.
Yeah, this would be the year that you would really like to see them at least make a bowl.
Mm-hmm.
Let me look to see if it's his I can't remember if it's his third or fourth, but if your third year, you really want to, your first 2 years, you basically get a buy on, right?
Yeah, because you're using the other guy's guys.
It's the other guy's guys. Your guys are coming in. You're going to redshirt a lot of them. You try to build them up, instill your values, your program, your game, your playbook, all that stuff. By the third year, if you're, a good college coach, you should absolutely make a bowl game. I mean, all you got to do is win 6 games.
Mm-hmm.
And then by your fourth year, then that's your team. Now you've had a whole class, and your team is what it is. And if you're going to be a big program, then you should be winning, 8, 9, 10 or more games. If you're Illinois, you'd be thrilled just winning 6 or 7 games every year for a while. But they don't even look like they can do that. They lost to Eastern Michigan at home this year.
Well, I don't... I'll lob this one out since we're talking about it, and we are Stacks and Jacks after all. Dave Murphy, who's in town, my buddies from Notre Dame, who's been a coach forever, says that the amount of people playing football is continuing to drop. And I think he's not the only one who says that. That some high schools now, a couple of public schools drop teams?
They did,
because
yeah.
they dropped
yeah,
under 14
they've
people.
Dropped teams, yep.
When
or are going to 7 or 8 man football games.
Do those guys, if I'm going to Kelly and it's 14 people, can I join the team next high school over if I went?
No.
My place dumps it?
I feel like you should be if your place dumps it.
Yeah, but you can't. I mean, well, especially in an area like the city of Chicago, they cannot go to a different school, to attend one school academically and play for another school.
Why?
Those are the rules.
So what if
it does seem like, I mean, I you definitely shouldn't be able to do that if both schools have a team. But it seems like if one of the schools drops their program, that you should, you know, if you wanted to play, I bet you could probably work that out.
Well, there has been some talk about combining teams like soccer teams, for example, in some of the neighborhoods where neither school has enough to fully
compete. I've gone through Oz Park, and you probably have too, watching baseball games, and a couple of the public schools, there's 14 guys there. That if we drop to 11, I don't see why, if you're a pitcher or a fielder, why shouldn't you be able to play?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, well, I'm just saying,
No, I understand, but I don't think that you can. I think IHSA rules prohibit that.
Okay. Well, I mean, I understand why they prohibit it, because obviously talk about being able to abuse something.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't have a team, pretty hard to abuse that. I mean,
well, that's true. And, I mean, the same argument has been made even around here, allowing girls to participate in other teams. If there's no girls team for track and field, for example, can she join the boys team?
Well, I would think that if the school next door has a team, I don't see why you just don't go over there. I mean, that to me would be, you're probably practicing in the same park anyway.
You may, yeah.
Anyway, where were we talking about? We were... The amount of football players. I mean, it seems to me, Maddie and Brendan, that if you've got in the Midwest, if you take that huge crucible of talent that is Ohio, Pennsylvania, where the high schools love football, I mean, who fights over that? It's Ohio State, it's Penn State, Michigan, and to a certain extent, Michigan State, right?
Mm-hmm.
Purdue gets some people, but Purdue can cut people out of Illinois, too. Iowa gets people there. Wisconsin pretty much recruits in Wisconsin, right? I mean, I'm just very general.
The Iowa Wisconsin Nebraska dynamic is they recruit in state for all of their linemen, basically offensive linemen, a lot of their defensive linemen. They have a really good walk on program, you know, where they might get a safety or something. Their tight ends are all local, but all their skill players are nationally recruited. They're Texas, well, California, yeah. Florida, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Ohio.
Well, the Irish
just don't have enough people.
Well, the Irish have the advantage of having the national games, so your mom can watch you, or your dad too, obviously, whatever game you're at.
And
so,
they had the Catholic thing where you get all the Boston, New Jersey, New York, mm-hmm. Chicago, yeah. you know, Catholic kids.
But it seems to me that the as years ago, I think a lot of the schools in Nebraska and Oklahoma high schools went to the 7-man. The talent level 25 years ago in Nebraska, Oklahoma was dramatic. And Oklahoma's got a good team this year, but by and large, Nebraska's been the part that went over the fence last. They got nobody. Right?
They've been horrible by their standard for 20 years.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Texas has been good, but can't break into no matter how much money they have, which seems to be more than anybody else by far, even Notre Dame. They can't break into the Alabama routine.
Yeah, the SEC has really got a lock on talent.
Texas, for whatever reason, I mean, even this year they're ranked like 11th, but they've already lost 2 games. I mean, they're not going to be in the conversation with the Alabamas and Clemsons and Georgias and LSUs.
And I'm going to say their alumni, not that the people of the Irish are saints, their alumni are equally as immoral about playing people as Alabama and other people. They don't care.
Right.
If you want to get rid of a coach whose buyout's $50 million, They'll have that check will be there tomorrow if they think mm-hmm. their team is going to, you know. I mean, you're not. They're, I mean, those guys are dying for the next. Darryl Royal. Did anybody other than people in Texas even know what you were saying when you said that guy's name? It was before you were born, Maddie, but the guy's name was Darryl Royal. But if you ever. Anybody from Texas, we had some people up here for seminars. I play for Darryl Royal. Who? Who? Darryl Royal. I'm like, oh, you mean Darryl Royal? Oh, yeah. I'm like, okay. But those guys, matter of fact, we had a guy from one of our seminars. He comes up there, and he had, I don't know what he did, but he was he helicoptered himself all over the place. He had a lot of dough. And I think he flew up in a private jet. So he came to one of the seminars. This is back in the early 90s. He goes, I played for Darryl. And evidently, he goes, everybody had their guy that took care of, everybody had an alumnus that took care of him. And it wasn't like a fortune, but made sure that you didn't really want for stuff, even though you didn't get it from the school. I mean, nothing crazy, nothing like no brand new car or anything like that, but you had something to drive and blah, blah, blah. He says, so the guy, he says, I get out of school, I go to a pro camp, and I realize these guys are bigger and faster than me, and I didn't even want to be on special teams because they would kill you on a special team, because I wanted no part of that. So he goes back to school. He goes, I called my alumnus, and I said, you know, I want to go to law school. And he goes, what's that got to do with me? You're out. I got a new guy. You know, that's on the team now. He goes, evidently the guy did make a phone call and he got into law school, or maybe he shouldn't have or whatever, but then the guy ended up doing real well, and he's a gazillionaire. So it wasn't like, he goes, yeah, I played D end at Texas. I forget whose camp he went to, Kansas City or somewhere. And he goes, I had no business there. I mean, those guys are way too big and too fast and they hit pretty hard. Texas, a lot of these schools, I just don't think there's enough people to go around.
So is this guy passing it forward? Is he becoming the new alumnus, the new guy for the next guy?
I don't know. I didn't ask him that. Look at the schools that were traditionally spectacular mm-hmm. and now aren't. Florida State, Florida.
Southern Cal.
Florida's very good.
But I'm saying these are the, there's...
Miami. It's not good, and they were obviously a powerhouse for a long time.
Mm-hmm. And the schools in California, I mean, that's the reason why they want
UCLA stinks. USC yeah. stinks.
Well, they want to pay their guys, because they don't want them going to Alabama getting paid. Essentially, isn't that? I mean, if you read between the lines, isn't that what they're doing with the new law? We might have been out of town. We're talking about that. There's a new law in the legislature out there. They want to pay their college athletes because they're tired of losing them.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a national thing in not too many years. I think there's a big push for that in other states, and especially if it takes off in California where they're able to keep some of the recruits in the state. I think the NCAA is fighting a losing battle of that. When you look at the amount of money that goes to administration and coaches and nothing going to the athletes.
Well, they pay them something though, right, Manny?
Well, they get room and board, and they get tuition.
No, there's a number.
They get some sort of per diem or
it's,
something.
It's a small stipend.
I think it's up stipend. To 4 or 5 G in some conferences.
It may be that high now, but...
It's a conference number.
Yeah.
But, as Kevin puts it...
I mean, that's pizza and beer for a semester.
Well, okay, but I'm saying it's better than having a problem where making guys wear a sport coat, and they don't have the money to buy the sport coat, and the coach gives them the money... And then the coach goes to jail for it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, at least it's something, But I mean, if you look at the entire mess of people, say Notre Dame, okay, the thing costs 70 grand. That's absurd price. Say 50. But when you walk down the whole line, I'll go to the jail for this. All the women's sports, you're more than well compensated because you're not drawing anybody in their place. You're not making a dime for the school, correct?
Well, not only women's sports, but you think about track and cross country.
Okay, basically, every sport except for football and men's basketball. Every sport.
Well, if you let me finish, I'm going to say even the bottom 60 guys on the football team
mm-hmm.
are well compensated at that number.
Mm-hmm. By the way, the new stipends are supposed to close the gap between scholarship money and what it actually costs to attend the school. The stipends available at most of the country major sports programs range from about $2,000 to $5,000 a year.
Okay.
Although some schools are reportedly offering a few thousand more than that.
I don't think a school can do it. It has to be a conference. It has to set the number.
This is just a Google search. I don't know the details to that level, but they said some schools are offering more than that, maybe 8,000.
But I'm saying at Notre Dame, probably, I would say that when you talk about being, quote, underpaid, I would say there's probably 15 guys on the football team that maybe juniors and seniors you want to keep, and there might be two or three guys in the basketball team. Everybody else is reasonably well compensated at a $50,000 or $60,000 number, I think. I mean, I might be a little too stringent with that, but, for God's sake, it's not they're getting nothing. Right? I mean, but then the difference makers, clearly, when you're charging $100 a ticket, I mean, come on, we know the economics of it.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, did you happen to see, I know John's late brother, Paul, again, terrific guy, died from ALS, when he was going to Cal, he was the opposite linebacker from Ron Rivera. And Paul got, these guys wanted to hire him to do some modeling during the summer. And no, not Playgirl modeling. He was some catalog. He was going to be like in flannel shirts and stuff. Nothing major. They weren't going to pay him diddly squat, basically. And Cal said, no, we own your likeness. You can't do it. Mm-hmm. So none of these kids in college football can be in commercials. I don't know if you knew that or not.
Yeah, I did.
Well, guess who was in a commercial the other night? State Farm. I almost spit up my wine. It was Saban doing a State Farm commercial. So how does a coach get to do it? They don't own his likeness for the money they pay him?
Well, you see, that's part of the hypocrisy. He's not an amateur athlete. That's part of the hypocrisy. I mean, and also think back to, it wasn't that long ago where Olympic athletes couldn't get money for sponsorship either. If they wanted to do a Visa commercial or a McDonald's commercial, they would lose their amateur status. Now, this is obviously way before the Dream Team and professional athletes were allowed back in. But there was a time where paying the athletes, even for appearing in a commercial, would have violated the sanctity of the Olympic Games. Jim Thorpe.
Yeah.
Jim Thorpe got money to play professional baseball, and he was banned.
Well, he was stripped of his medals.
Yeah.
Well, real quick, because we have to go to break. When you look at the people today, who's the lady who just Tiger Woods' heartthrob, the skier?
Lindsey Vonn.
But, I mean, you look at these people, and they're skiing into their 30s, and you compare their Olympic medals to people when you and I were young. You can't make the comparison, because Jean-Claude Keeley went, and when he was 23 or 24, he went to his Olympics. He might have gone when he was like 18, when he could barely, you know, when he was young. But then there's your Olympics, and when you leave, you didn't make any money at it. You went and got a job.
Yeah.
You couldn't, I mean, Eric Heiden, if he would have gotten paid all those years, he might have gone to 5 Olympics and had 7 more medals 10 more times. I mean, you can't even compare a swimmer like Phelps, who arguably is the best swimmer ever, but 30 years ago, that wouldn't have been his job. He'd have gone to 1 or 2 Olympics, and that was it.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe, right. What did Spitz went to 2, right?
Yes, 68 and 72.
Yeah, but I mean, he wasn't going to be there 10 years later without being able to make a nickel.
No.
S&P futures up 7, NASDAQ futures up 14. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of Dax Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jacks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including 4 past CME presidents, have chosen Dax Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering 3 research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice weekly top 3 tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than 3 decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a 1-month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of Dax Research. Call toll-free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTIsecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTIsecurities.com.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at ptisecurities.com, or feel free to email me at john@ptisecurities.com. That's john@ptisecurities.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now.
There's something happening here.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Alley, Mr. Brennan Cornan, Mr. Matt Weber. SP Futures up 8.25 now, NASDAQ Futures up 18.75. Brennan, a question you just asked on break, we should discuss, and we should, is very similar to the one that Joan Esposito asked me yesterday. What is impeachment going to have on the market? And one of the things that I have certainly preached since I've been on the air is that despite the fact that everybody in the world wants to call or call a TV show or call something, the first thing they'll ask you, you know, is why is the market up today and you're, or down, and you're supposed to have essentially a canned answer. I mean, you could always say something like, you know, market up as Matt Weber leaves the can, you know, and try and make it a causative sort of thing. Her question was, how does impeachment affect the market? And I went back and looked at Tricky Dick and Bumbling Bill, or whatever you want to call him, impeachment. And it was incredibly difficult to separate the two out. Now, when you look at the Nixon situation, during the year and a half or whatever this impeachment thing spun out, or it might only have been 14 months or whatever, but in the middle of that came the Arab oil embargo, and inflation rates ran to 11%, like in that year.
Mm-hmm.
So the market absolutely headed for the tank, right? But I'm going to say if the guy was president, if Solomon was president, it still would have gone in the tank.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't separate the two. Same way with Bill Clinton. It was in the middle. The market was going down when the thing all started because he had the long-term capital situation and everybody was worried about Russian ruble and everything else. And all of a sudden that got kind of cleared up because the Fed essentially bailed out long-term capital. And I was on the floor the day they did. They raised or they lowered discount rate like on an expiration Friday and let those guys trade ahead of everybody. I mean, it was brutal. I knew several people got carried out. The Fed bailed those guys out. They didn't care about the rest of the people. I mean, which is, you know, my dislike for the Fed going back forever. I mean, they take care of certain people, depending on the day.
They pick the winners.
They pick the winners. And let them know beforehand. They have the nerve to prosecute other people that they think might have got ahead of something, which is, you know, so un-American, I can't even go there. But in their mind, we can break the rules. We made the rules. But so now, you know, the question comes up, what is the Turkish situation do, or what does the Trump situation impeachment do vis-a-vis the market? And the answer is, you got to wait and see what else happens with the market. And the Turkish thing, and are we talking about a full-blown war? The only thing that I've observed, and I'm not being funny here, is that I think that this is the best advertisement for Toyota and Nissan pickup trucks.
Yeah, they're everywhere.
They're everywhere over there with the machine guns on them. They're like, remember in the Rat Patrol, we used to have Jeeps?
Yeah.
You don't see anybody in a Jeep over there. They're all in Nissan and Toyota pickups.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's not good advertisement for Jeep.
No, the Jeeps don't make the open backs anymore the way that they have for Nissan and Toyotas, where you can
pull the top off a Wrangler.
Yeah, but you don't see that very much. I mean,
I don't think they're as good of vehicles as the other ones.
They probably aren't.
God, maybe they don't sell them over there. But where is this heading? Now we're going to do. This guy loves tariffs.
Mm-hmm.
We'll let you go invade a country, but by the way, we're going to slap a tariff on you.
Yeah. But you know how when I see the way that the administration is changing their story over the last couple of days, I mean, this is like an arsonist saying, "Let me put out your fire."
Yeah,
and at what point is the market going to respond to this? That these are fake crises or things that are spawned by the administration, and how do you respond to that?
Well, I would take the, and I have no idea where this is heading, my statement here. I would take the longer term view, or the bigger view, and say we couldn't wait to get the European U.S. ally conglomerate, whatever you want to call them, the allies since, you know, certainly World War II. We couldn't wait to bolster up the southern end of NATO with Turkey.
Mm-hmm.
And we let them join NATO, correct? They're not in the European Union, but they joined NATO.
Correct.
And now we got a guy down there that's a problem. I mean, mm-hmm. he's clearly a dictator, doesn't seem to care who gets hurt, who doesn't, has a serious dislike for the Kurds and anybody else. He's not a guy that is taking Turkey toward being more secular. It's the other way. And now the guy wants to pony up with Russia after being a NATO member and having NATO essentially equipment, planes, software. I mean, you name it. Now, how current it all is, I don't know. It's a loose question. But now this guy is basically gone rogue.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got him dealing with Trump, who I think is incredibly inexperienced in dealing with stuff like this. And I'm sure I would be too. But I'm not saying I would be any better, but I'm just saying now we've got one very unpracticed guy going against a guy who's a, you know, some would say a Hitler growing up, mm-hmm. you know, and or somebody along those lines. Now, what do you do? If you lose NATO, a NATO southern country to Russia, all of a sudden, if you look at a map of the Persian Gulf and those other places, and you look at our, quote, allies, obviously you've got Israel. You've got Saudi only because we bolster the guys up, not because we like the place. And you've got the Emirates. Mm-hmm. Look at the rest of the map.
Yep.
There's nobody there. I mean, what is Iraq now? A mess.
Mm-hmm.
Iran clearly isn't one of our guys. If you take Turkey off that map and put them on the other side, I'm just saying, I'm not so sure I want to be an aircraft carrier in the Persian Gulf. You're surrounded.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying they're going to start shooting at them or not. I'm just saying, you're surrounded.
Yep.
So, I mean, to me, what is the
law? Well, that's the situation that the 1,000 U.S. troops are in. They're right now caught between the Syrian army and the Turkish army coming in from two sides. They're in the middle. And the roads are blocked. So, you know, what happens if, purely by accident, something happens to a couple of the American troops or a couple hundred of the American troops? What are we going to do? Well, and how will the market react to an escalation in hostilities?
The way I understand it is we had essentially 50 people over there advising the Kurds, something along those lines. This is what I mm-hmm. gleaned from many different shows on Sunday and reading about it.
Yeah.
There were like 50 people. And our 50 people there essentially kept Turkey from messing with that area because they didn't want to mess with our 50 people, even though they're only 50.
Mm-hmm.
So when Trump gets on the phone call and says, by the way, we're pulling our 50 out, and the other guy says, well, I guess we're going to invade then, or something, basically. Mm-hmm. He must have told him that. And Trump essentially said, either I don't care, or go ahead, or don't. Probably said don't because we're going to put sanctions on you. And they said, you know, sanctions, schmanctions. And invaded like 40 seconds after the phone call was made.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it had to do with them not wanting to come down on our people. Not that the 50 people were ever going to resist the thousands of people that the Turkish are coming in with.
Mm-hmm.
But it had to do with, we're not going to kill any Americans because we're afraid to. Don't worry, we'll move them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is I don't know if I've heard a situation like that ever in history, but that's essentially what's happened. And now they've come in so far that they're butting up against another 1,000 of our guys, basically. Mm-hmm. Isn't that what you're talking about?
Yes. There are 1,000, apparently there are 1,000 troops in that part of the world. And if you look at a map, the Syria is divided into three sections. On one part is a Syrian army that's backed by Russia. On the other part is a Turkish army coming through. And that section in the middle is where the U.S. troops are. And the roads on both ends are blocked, so they cannot get, I mean, they could not drive their vehicles to Turkey, or they couldn't drive into one of the other countries around there, Jordan or any place else over there. They're stuck in the middle, and if there's going to be a removal of the 1,000 troops and their equipment, the only way they can do that right now is through an airlift. So they're getting squeezed from both sides, and both sides are saying that we don't want to harm the Americans, but, you know, How likely like is that?
Sounds like something that is incredibly poorly thought out.
Mm-hmm.
A seat of the pants type of thing. At least you say, we're moving out, but you guys give us whatever you're going to do. By the way, don't do anything. We're going to put sanctions on you. But if you're going to do something, you're going to give us 3 weeks to get out of here.
Yeah.
We didn't even do that. It doesn't appear.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't.
Well, I don't think that they expected that. I don't think the administration expected the incursion from Turkish forces to be as swift.
Why? Everybody else did.
Well, I can't answer the question why, but I think that they were caught
General,
unprepared.
Petraeus certainly did. The guy who was, all
these Mattis did that. That's why Mattis resigned.
Yeah. Him and Petraeus said, well, it's going to happen a second round of there.
Even Lindsey Graham came around at one point.
Yeah. I don't, the Turkish situation, Matty, did you look it up last week, or most Kurdish people live in Turkey, correct? Some live in Iraq and some live in Syria. But I think there's, if you don't mind digging this, I think there's like 11 or 12 million Kurdish people, something like that, or 20, and 12 million live in Turkey and in the rest are in. And what the Turks don't want to have happen is the people outside their country
coming in.
Well, saying, look, we need a Kurdish state. And by the mm-hmm. way, the Kurdish state, we're taking a chunk out of Turkey too, because that's where we live.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're clearly the biggest people in the world that don't have a place to live.
According mm-hmm. to a quick Google search, the estimated population is 35 million.
Okay.
A rough estimate by the CIA fact book has Kurdish populations of 12 million in Turkey, 6 million in Iran, about 5 to 6 million in Iraq, and less than 2 million in Syria, which adds up to close to 28 million Kurds in Kurdistan and adjacent regions.
Is Kurdistan a place?
Yeah, that's a country.
Okay. So they do have a country, but it's not anywhere near big enough for their people.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, us giving Canada, Ontario, and saying, that's your country, we're taking a rest.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, but they've been kind of screwed all over the place by everybody. And, whatever. I don't know what the situation, I don't know what the long-term thing over there is. Now,
And by the way, Kurdistan, the more I read it, is more of a region than an actual recognized country.
That's what I thought. There's no registered, there's no country there.
It's a roughly defined geocultural historical region wherein the Kurdish people form a prominent majority population, and Kurdish culture, languages, and national identity have historically been based.
And it's essentially about a quarter of all four of those countries you mentioned.
Yeah. And it appears to be the majority recognized in Iraq.
Northern Iraq. Because in the south you got the Sunnis, and somewhere you got the Shia, correct?
Mm-hmm.
It's a border mess, basically.
Yep.
And, I don't know the idea that you're in and you're out. I don't think you can ever be, once you're in, I don't see how you're ever out, Brendan.
What do you mean, in or out? You mean U.S. forces there?
Well, I'll ask you. You've got adult kids. When do you stop being a parent? Never.
You never stop being a parent.
I mean, saying, once you go into Korea, like we did.
Mm-hmm. We're still there.
We're still there. I mean, generals understand that politicians
don't. We're still
in
Germany. We're still in Japan.
You can't. We need to go in there and do this stuff. Oh, by the way, it's costing us too much. We're out. I mean, why would anybody want to deal with the U.S.?
Mm-hmm. Well, certainly not now.
Right. Yeah.
When you have the Kurdish troops who sustain heavy losses on your behalf, and you just pull out and let them get slaughtered. I mean, that's inconceivable. And why would anybody trust? Now, you can always raise the argument that they might trust anybody besides this president, but why?
Yeah, why? Well, and then the other side of the coin is, I didn't sign up to be there for 20 years. A younger person might say that.
Mm-hmm.
No, you didn't, but somebody before you obviously did.
Yep.
I don't think that the boundaries of the state should be what they are now, but guess what?
Mm-hmm.
They've been that way for 200 and some years.
I mean,
you might want to change them, but you can't, you're stuck with them.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think Chicago should have 50 wards. Well, okay. That and a buck gets you a phone call. Or what if you can find a machine?
Yeah, that and $5 will get you a cup of coffee.
Yeah, basically. So, I mean, as to how it affects, the market, the question is, does it cause a problem within NATO?
Mm-hmm.
Now, are there international sanctions on Turkey? Do we make Turkey broke?
Well,
okay, if Turkey goes broke, what bank do they take with them?
Go back to the NATO question for a second. One of the principles of NATO is that if one of our NATO alliance members is in battle or attacked, we have to defend them. So,
I wouldn't.
Is the U.S. supposed to now side with Turkey against the Kurds because there's a war going on?
Do you think that Trump would feel any obligation if the Russians rolled into Lithuania tomorrow to help them out?
No, I do not.
I don't either. Or even Poland.
No, I do not.
And yet, our name's on a piece of paper, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, at the same time, he wants to cut back and make those people come up with more of their own defense, which I don't... The idea of helping to pay for it, I'm with him on that.
Mm-hmm.
But at least he should know the history that we didn't want those people to pay for it. We wanted to do it because we wanted to be in control.
That's right. And I was just about to bring up that point, that the whole structure of NATO and the amount of money that the United States pays to support that was for United States influence and control over those regions.
Same with Japan.
Mm-hmm. And Germany.
Yeah, we never wanted... I mean, if you would have said in 1958, hey, we're spending too much to protect and control Japan, let them get their own army and an air force, I think people would have said, what? What are you, from Mars?
Yeah, well, at that point, there were too many people in the political realm and who had fought in World War II.
Yeah.
They wouldn't let that happen.
No. No, we'll take care of it. We can afford it. We'll keep people in Okinawa. Mm-hmm. You know, partially to protect Japan, partially to watch them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. We did the same thing.
More likely to watch them than to protect them.
I mean, do you think we had all those troops in Germany in the beginning to protect them or to watch them?
No. They're certainly there to watch them.
Watch them and then...
And watch the Russians. And
watch the Russians.
Yeah.
I mean, you walk in tomorrow and go, wow, that's... I mean, the same thing can happen. You see it happen in businesses here. You see it happen everywhere, Brennan. I mean, I know of people... you know, obviously, Audrey has a wide network of friends being in real estate and on a trading floor and other places she's had jobs, even from her color guard days. But she has a lot of friends, and she has some that are like doctors. And some of the doctors, I won't name the companies, have become like the prominent in some of these firms where they have really spectacular programs for their workers. And, and part of it is a way to keep their costs down. You know, I mean, it's not just being philanthropic, but where like one of the ladies would go to a plant, and there might be 300-400 people working there. They all have the ability to come see her. Now, she doesn't necessarily treat them there, but she has an office, and she'll say, okay, no, you need to go here, you need to go here, you're okay, you know, and make sure everybody's got this shot, that check, over everybody's stuff. I mean, it was a way of keeping people up to date, you know, where you didn't necessarily have to go send somebody to hospital for a physical type of thing. And people would buy that company, say, we're not doing any of that crap. You're fired. Get out of here. We don't want any part of it.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to get people a minimum policy if we have to. And, you know, if one goes down, we'll hire another one.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so the attitudes are like, it's not just like presidents. I mean, companies are in and out on being nice to people, depending on who the president is.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure law firms, you know, there's one law firm says, you know, if you're not billing 60 hours a week, I don't want you. And the next guy goes, I don't want anybody billing 60 hours a week. That's no life for anybody. You know, we're cutting back to 50 or 45. You know, by the way, have a family, and we want you here for the next 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
And the next person comes in, screw that. He'll give me the 60 a week again. So, I mean, it's not like this doesn't happen all over the place.
Yep.
But it shouldn't necessarily happen with presidents of a country.
Mm-hmm.
They should have some combination of history. Although people before you have sort of made mistakes, and you can always make adjustments, but... Mm-hmm. This is more than an adjustment.
Yeah.
I mean, I honestly don't believe that Trump has any conscience of how NATO is thinking about this, how Europe, how this is going to land in 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
I know it's a bad accusation, but I'm sure the people around him probably do, or hope they do.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, it's how much are we spending over there? What are we getting for it? Let's get out.
Yeah. Yeah. Without understanding, as you mentioned, the initial investment and why we did it initially and how it has transformed over the years.
But I'm of the impression that the solution, only because somebody suggested this to me, somebody who was on the ground over there, this is years ago. He was one of the guys who was going from the Taliban with the bundles of $100 bills, trying to buy them to our side.
Mm-hmm.
And the chiefs, and I go, all right, if you had to fix it tomorrow, what would you do? He goes, I don't think the people in the southern section are ever coming our way. They want to be up in the hills. They want to do their thing. They want to be like the Palestinian, not the Palestinians, the Pakistan group that's in there and, you know, do their Muslim thing up in the hills. And that's, you know, live by Sharia law. He goes, we should just divide the thing right in the middle. He goes, the people in the northern part, they want to be American tomorrow. Or, you know, they don't want any part of that crap. But to try and get them together, because somebody 100 years from now said, here's the country, Afghanistan, they all need to live together. They don't want to live together.
Yeah. Yep.
So he says, just draw it down the middle like we did Korea.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yes.
I mean, I'm not saying this kid's gospel or whatever, but it's certainly something to be thought about.
Mm-hmm.
Look, we're not getting anywhere with you guys. Do whatever you want below this line, but don't come our side.
Mm-hmm.
It's happened before. Hatfield McCoys did that, for God's sake. Right?
The United States and Canada did that up on the border.
Well, pretty much.
I mean, there were parts that they were looking to move the northern U.S. border, and the two countries agreed it's going to be here.
Yeah, well, and I mean, because these things are draining on an economy, and we have serious social problems here. But then again, we always have. There's always been a problem with, but I think the biggest issue, Brandon, I can't bring it enough because I was talking about it last night as well, is that when you have a situation where your growth, and I could make the point. By the way, I went through and did a calculation yesterday. Something I should never do. If you take last year our CPI according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics was 1.7%, right? And you have a Federal Reserve who's dying to get it to 2%, so they're pouring money in to keep up asset prices, telling you that the reason why they're doing it is to get the inflation number up. Last year, according to their numbers, medical services are up 4.4%, okay? And they've got it at a 7% number, even though it's 20% of the GDP. If you do that mathematical adjustment and apply the 4.4% to 20% of GDP instead of 7.5, it adds a whole half a point to your GDP.
Mm-hmm.
Or I mean your CPI. So we'd be at 2.2% even with their numbers, which is pretty high for a country that's growing whatever we're growing 1.5.
Mm-hmm.
So that would say to you that we're really growing by 4. If you subtracted that off and get to 1.5, and I don't see how we're growing by 4.
Let me ask you a slightly different question. I mean, one of the ways, if you follow the projections that we may be heading into a recession because of economic indicators, what's the quickest way out of a recession?
Depends on the recession.
Well, I mean, think about the Great Depression. How do we get out of the Great Depression?
We fought a world war.
Okay. If we're heading towards another recession right now, could there be escalation of hostilities in the Middle East?
When you say a recession, and then you wander it into depression.
Okay. Well, because I was thinking about the Great Depression in the 30s.
Okay, I'm going to say that the Great Depression and what happened in 2008 are singular events, and they're very similar in the sense that when you say a recession, you're talking about a business cycle recession.
Mm-hmm.
Which are very healthy in the long run. They're very normal. What it says is the economy gets a little too hot, people bid stuff up, and all of a sudden the loans get too high and whatever, and you got too many people, and all of a sudden, too many people producing, stuff is too expensive, and all of a sudden you get too hot. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden you cut back down, and the guys that bought last and bought for higher, too expensive, they're in trouble, they go out of business, you essentially take away the froth. You go into this little bit of a recession, and up you go again. Mm-hmm. That's what happens routinely. Now, the Great Depression was unique until 2008.
Yeah.
In the sense that that wasn't it. What happened was people's savings were ripped away from them. It was a balance sheet recession. Your great grandmother went down to get her money out of the bank or two grand, and she got the door hit her in the nose.
Mm-hmm.
So you ripped people's savings. You ripped their entire life savings out of them. And the same thing happened in 2008. I just bought a house for $250. By the way, it's now worth $160. I saved for how many years, my wife and I, for the $50,000 to put down, and now it's gone.
Mm-hmm.
That's a whole different brand of ball, because now you strip away people's ability to move to another city to get a job, to do other, you just rip it apart from them. So the point where even though you come back, you don't come back with the same person in the house.
Mm-hmm.
He's gone. He's out. You don't come back with the same farmer. Like when Trump comes up and says, don't worry, soybeans is going to be fine next year. The thousands of people that have lost their farms.
It's too late.
It's too late. You might get some big company come in and now owns them, which adds to the other problem that we only have a few owners left.
Mm-hmm.
SP futures up 9.25, NASDAQ futures up 23. They do all seem to come together, don't they, Brendan? We'll be
they
right
sure
back.
Do.
Be right back, Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and try to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control. Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell, Mr. Brendan Cornan, and Mr. Matt Weber on the board. Brendan Cornan of 100 Marathons, Cornan.
Very impressive.
On Channel 7 last week, like a big shot.
Thank you for that, Manny.
There you go. SP Futures up 875, NASDAQ Futures up 22. Individual stocks and earnings this morning. We've got J.P. Morgan, which is up 205. They had good earnings. We had Goldman Sachs, not so good. They're down 407. We had Johnson & Johnson, which hired prescription drugs. Forget that, what was it, $8 million judgment they just had the other day? Don't worry about that. We'll get that taken care of. Dow's up 82. Over in Europe, we've got DAX up 49.4%, FTSE down 18.2%, CAC around up 26.4%. So I'm going to say slightly upside mixed in Europe, if that's a description. Nikkei up 408, that's 1.8%, Shanghai down 16.5%, Hang Seng down 17%, call that flat. Finance, like I mentioned earlier, 1.69%, pretty far above the 1.48 bottom, but, you know, not anywhere near back towards 2 either. Bund minus 0.46, they bottomed out at minus 0.78 that I saw. Japan, 0.17, they bottomed out at 0.29, so they're creeping towards zero. Oil, down 18 cents, 53.41. Brent down 5 cents, 59.31. That spread is $5.90. Natural gas, 2.28. RBOB gas, 1.61, which boggles the mind, Brennan. RBOB is like 3 cents cheaper than before the attack in Saudi Arabia. That every single station here has got to be 25 cents higher, especially
yep.
in the city.
Yes. And they did that very quickly.
Yes. Gold down 50 cents, 14.97. Silver down 7 cents, 17.63. Betty, what do you got for us, Traffic Weather Sports?
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. Traffic building heavily on the Edens and Kennedy, more specifically because of that outbound crash earlier at Cumberland, and then a new one came across at Harlem Avenue on the outbound side of I-90, and this is the Kennedy pretty jammed up in both directions as we're heading into Tuesday morning. No issues on the Eisenhower, though traffic is building steadily there. Same for the Stevenson, no accidents to report. But further west on I-290, just before Addison Road, when the Eisenhower starts to head north, there's a crash on the outbound side, so keep that in mind. But when you're heading into the east-west I-290, Eisenhower, no accidents to report. Southside expressways are looking okay. Off the expressways, we have a crash in Elgin, Big Timber Road at McLean Boulevard in the northwestern suburbs. But everything else looking good out there. Weather today, some sunshine early. Could have a shower roll in later on this morning, but overall it's going to be a very pleasant day with partly cloudy skies, a high of 62, about 10 degrees warmer than we've been the last few days. Right now it is mostly sunny and 51 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 92 today. Right now it's clear and 67. In sports, it took the Blackhawks until their third game, but they're finally in the win column, beating Edmonton last night 3-1.
Who was undefeated.
That's right, and was scoring a ton of goals. I think Edmonton averaged like 4.5 goals per game coming into that one, and the Blackhawks really took it to them on both sides of the puck, so that was a nice win. Coyotes were off last night. Major League Baseball playoffs, the Nationals are now up 3-0 after blowing out the Cardinals 8-1 last night. The Nats will look for the sweep tonight in Washington against those Cardinals. American League side, of course, is tied at one game apiece between the Astros and the Yankees heading to New York. Monday Night Football, the Lions came out strong early and actually led 13-0, but had to settle for 5 field goals throughout the game. A couple of questionable calls late, and the Packers rally back to steal that one in Green Bay, 23-22. Chief.
Only questionable by the new color announcer.
Well, it's all over Twitter that the referees were horrible, and it's about time that someone actually calls out the officials, is what I've been reading.
I mean, I think you can get some very more blatant ideas than that.
I didn't actually see it, so I can't really comment on it. I didn't see the actual calls because I had a basketball game last night. But over the course of the season, instituting this pass interference challenge thing was a really stupid idea. I don't know how you can challenge penalties. I just think that's ridiculous. And they were trying to do something after that Rams-Saints debacle in the NFC Championship game, but I just don't think replaying penalties is the way to go. But there's just, I mean, it's just been a ton of flags, some of them warranted, some of them not, and then just a lot of bad calls. I know it's not easy, but, man.
Right, two questions for you, Mavis.
The other sports don't seem to have this bad of a problem.
By the way,
Well, if you look at some of the judgments in baseball over the years, there's been some bad baseball calls, and in every sport. I mean, sometimes the refs and umpires just have a bad day.
But well, that's definitely true.
They're umping better than, I umped a softball game once. I'm not very good ump, and the guy says, You're not a very good ump. I said, I'm a better ump than you are a softball player. I mean, at some point, I mean, why should they be perfect when the other people aren't?
I agree with that, too.
Yeah.
I mean, I get it.
It's a game.
you don't expect everyone to be perfect, but when you miss like five or six calls in a row, it's like, come on.
But you watch these baseball pitchers, they can say whatever they want, and Tommy Shanahan is a Mr. Big Bazoo about this. He wants to go to the umpires and go to the chip and the ball. These guys are on the edge. Half these pitchers that are real good, like a guy like Hendricks, I'm going to say a third of his pitches are right on the line.
Yeah, I don't care think if you about Greg Maddux. Yeah. Think about a guy like Greg Maddux. And, you know, when you get a reputation like that, you're going to get a couple of inches on either side of the plate, off the plate, because and if your catcher is stationary, you're going to get that call.
But, I mean, there's out of every at-bat, there's two – with a good pitcher – there's two pitches that with the screen, I can't, I don't know whether it's a ball or a strike. Is it half the ball on one side of the line or is it touching the line? I mean, it's almost, the ball eviscerates the line half the pitches.
Mm-hmm. And that's the way pitchers are taught.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's what you're supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, I have two questions from last night. Two questions. One is, the first time I've ever seen, now again, I don't watch every game, a too many men on the field penalty before the play was run.
I've never seen that.
No, there was a game last year. One of the college games did that because when they're about to break the huddle, they've got to have only 11 guys on the field. Like, they're not supposed to have 12 guys in the huddle.
Well, that's another. Well, though you said the one where the guy ran off.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm saying this particular. But the guy, the same color announcer, said that once you drop into formation. Whenever, you know, the offensive linemen take their stance.
Mm-hmm.
If there is an extra guy on defense, you can call it that. Then we don't. You don't have to start the play. I never heard that. And I'm sure he's right. I mean, obviously they did, but I just wanted. I didn't know. I thought you had to wait till after the play, and if the offense scored, they got to decline it.
Yeah, and the defense has an opportunity to run off the field before the ball snapped.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Even if you have 12 guys on the field, but Brennan's right. You can't have it in the huddle. I know that. Right, that was a rule they changed about 5 years ago or so. But, you know, when you're looking at the offense and you're subbing in and out, I mean, there's always 12, 13 guys, you know, one or two guys running off the field.
Yeah, one guy's running in, one guy's running out.
Exactly. And then the quarterback, and Aaron Rodgers is really good at this, if he recognizes that and thinks he can get it snapped before you're off the field, then they'll do that, but you get the free play because of it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I just never saw the 12 called like that. But anyway,
I didn't either.
The other one was Green Bay's driving, and there's, I'm going to say, less than a minute. And of course they're taking their time. They're going down the field because they're down by two. So the field goal obviously wins it. Well, they run this guy up the middle, Brandon. I'm going to say, I don't know, Matty, if you can check it for sure. I'm saying 40 seconds, 35 maybe. The guy breaks through. The goal line is from me to you, and he goes, "Oops!" and basically sits right down on his ass. He purposely didn't score with 35 seconds left, and I'm thinking, wow, I would never coach somebody to do that under a minute. I'd rather have the seven, even though if you hit, you know, you would only go up by five or six, you know, if you went for two. I just like, what would happen if all of a sudden on the next play, then they took a knee and then kicked the field goal with like 2 seconds up. What if you sail that ball over a guy's head and you miss the field goal after you disdained the 6 points? I mean, I just never even thought you would do that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I understand that it could work out that if you score with 2 minutes to go from the 40-yard line,
you're giving the other team too
much
time.
But you might, in retrospect, be happier if you'd have ran four more plays and then went in. But it's not the same as just saying I'm running out of bounds on purpose at the five.
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen anybody. You know what I'm saying? At the end of the day, you'd say, "Boy, I wish you would have been a minute and a half further off," right?
Mm-hmm.
But remember
a couple of years ago when it was the opposite, when the defense would just let somebody score because you figure that they're going to score anyway. You know, they're down at the 1 yard line, so we either stop them for three plays and they get in on the fourth, or else we just let them walk in right now untouched and we get the ball back and try to score and win the field goal.
So the play she's talking about, I'm looking at the play by play because again I didn't watch the game live the second half anyway. With 1:36 to go in the fourth, it was 1st and 10 at the Detroit 11, and Jamal Williams ran an off tackle to the right down to the 3 yard line. And then went down. So I'm assuming that's the play you're talking about. Because then the next two plays, Rodgers kneeled.
Yeah.
He kneeled at 53 seconds and kneeled at 9 seconds. So with, you know, a minute and 30 left, you're saying he could have walked into the end zone, but chose to go down at the 3.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, I would for sure have, try to kick the field goal on third down, or if I bleeped it up, I'd have another chance at it.
Mm-hmm. If you bleep up the snap, right.
Or the hold or whatever. I mean, if right. something's not right.
The snap hold thing, you have a chance if you have a timeout, which I assume they did. But yeah, I agree. But what they did was they kneeled it on second down, kneeled it on third down, and then kicked essentially what an old extra point was
right.
before they moved the extra points back, which they used to make at like 98% success.
Oh, I get all that. I'm just saying I don't want to be the coach the next day in the paper saying you had it in there and you essentially gave it back to them so you could kneel to and kick a field goal. What's the matter with you?
Like, but that's what makes sports so enjoyable yeah. because you never know. I mean, think about Pete Carroll in the Super Bowl a couple of years ago
oh, yeah.
when he decided to pass instead of run.
Their win probability went from like 97% to zero
yeah.
right at that moment because they decided to run a slant after they'd just been running for 10 yards a carry to get down to the 1 yard line.
Mm-hmm.
It is interesting though because at 136, you know, if you're Detroit, you like you said earlier, you might just want to let them score that
yeah.
that touchdown. That way you at least have a shot with a minute
well, maybe
36.
Maybe they did. They refused to go in.
And then, but then if you're Green Bay, you're like, do I take it here and give them a minute and 35 so they have the last, you know, chance to win, or do I go down on purpose and then trust that my kicker can make an extra point?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's strategy on both sides. I don't
yeah.
think it, and I see both sides of the argument.
Yep.
I just don't,
and
I don't think you ever concede as good as their defense is. You can't concede the other team a touchdown with a minute 30 left, which is essentially what they would have done.
Well, no, but Manny's right.
You don't
want to
lose.
Strategy.
You don't want to lose on an extra point field goal either, and then have no chance with the ball.
You see, if you'd have been on the trading floor for 19 years, both of you gentlemen, if the chances of something, I mean, in 87, I lost a lot of dough. Okay, and everybody knows that, right? Well, in 3 days, the market was down something like 32%. Before that, the biggest move ever was the crash in 29, which was
mm-hmm.
like 11%.
Mm-hmm.
Eisenhower's heart attack was like 8. Kennedy's assassination was like 8. So I had a position, and I figured, okay, it's not the best, but it's not going to be, you know, it's not going to be 30%, but
right.
it was. First thing going through my mind, if I sat down on purpose at the 2 yard line, is my chances of making this extra point just went from 99% to 50. Because something's going to go wrong. The gods of football are going to say.
I don't disagree yeah. with you at all.
I don't disagree with you either.
I mean, I get it. And anything can happen, and you would have major regrets if that extra point was blocked or if
mm-hmm.
something weird happened
yeah.
and he clanked it off the upright. It's not like we haven't seen it before.
Or the snap goes
yeah.
back to the 50-yard line.
But then, but the other side is if you score a touchdown with a minute 36 left and then the Lions drive right down the field, which they had done that entire game, And then they score a touchdown with 5 seconds left, and I guarantee there would be criticism that would say, why don't you just go down and kick the game winning field?
I would say, you know what?
Which just goes to show you that whoever wins the game had the right strategy.
Right.
Yeah, well, I just say, you know, if they do that, shake their hand. I mean, the guy's not Johnny, you were Tom Brady. The guy, and he's pretty good in Detroit, but he's not
Stafford.
That good.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, he's good, but he's definitely not a Hall of Famer, that's for sure.
No, I mean, I just, you know, it's, but that's what makes sports. I mean,
but how great is the NFC North? I mean,
yeah.
You look at it, and you know the Lions really should have won that game, but since they didn't, the Packers are now 5-1, and they're definitely.
Well, they shouldn't have the tie either. They should have won that game.
Right, they're definitely leaders in the clubhouse because not only are they 5-1, but they're 3-0 in the division. The Vikings are 4-2, but they're 0-2 in the division. The Bears are 3-2, 1-1 in the division after going 1-1 without their starting quarterback, and then the Lions are 2-2-1 after that loss. And are 0-1 in the division, but all four teams are .500 or better, and all four teams, you know, are legitimate playoff contenders.
Yeah, but the Lions are not going to get the game back against the Cardinals. They tied. That's a clunk, and that was a layup.
That was a layup that they really needed yeah. to win that game. And then last night was a game you really had were in position to steal, not expecting to win at Green Bay, and they really
yeah.
dominated that game for 95% of it.
Well, the Bears are essentially three games back because they got a game in hand.
Correct. Yeah.
So unless the Bears even that up by winning in Lambeau, which
well, is right now the Bears are 1.5 games back because the Packers have played one extra game. But to your point, the Packers have a game in hand, and it's a road win, so it's almost like even more than a game in hand.
What I'm saying is, if they're tied, they got to play another game. But if right now,
right.
if it ended tied, the Packers win.
Yep, absolutely. That's right.
But
conversely, on the other side, the Bears have a game in hand over the Vikings. So even though the Vikings are a half game up on the Bears at 4-2 and the Bears are 3-2, if they were tied, the Bears would have the advantage.
I didn't realize that Detroit had beat Green Bay four times in a row.
Yeah, Detroit's, I mean, they're a tough team, but they've played Green Bay really tough. The Bears swept Detroit last year and could have lost both games, but won both games. And so, I mean, Detroit's always right there. They've just never been able to get, you know, across the finish line.
Well, the Bears are this year, unfortunately, being a Chicago fan, I mean, we said it when the season started, Matty. What was the record last year? It was
12-4.
Right, I think they could have a better team this year. But given the fact that Green Bay seems to have a defense, Detroit's better, and the schedule the Bears are playing.
The Bears have the number one most difficult schedule in the NFL.
They could be a better team than last year and be 8-8.
Very possible.
And they're not a better team.
And they were relatively injury-free last year.
Right, and now without Larson and Kyle Long, they are not a better team.
Their offensive line, healthy, has sucked this year. Their offensive line, injured, like it's been the last two games, has sucked even worse.
Well, when was Long healthy?
Well, they were healthy the first couple games of the season, and they couldn't run the ball or pass protect. And then the injuries started happening, like they happen for every team, and now it's even worse. Now I'm hoping with the bye week they moved in this Coward guy, who they really like,
They also brought up that guy from Notre Dame, Alex Barrs.
Yeah, and hopefully, you know, they can patch this thing up after a bye week of working on things, because they're running the ball for like 2 yards a carry, and they're not pass protecting either. And
When you run when you're Aaron Rodgers, everybody's worried about you passing. Every time the Bears have run the last 2 weeks, there's 15 guys seemingly on the other team standing right there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and especially with the backup quarterback in there, Trubisky's really, you know, has to, if they're going to make the playoffs this year, he has to be like the guy that played against the Redskins. Well, he cannot be like the guy that played the first two games this year.
He's no better than the guy they have in there now, except he can run.
Well, I think he's better, but it's hard to argue that. He hasn't played that well this season.
It is hard to argue that because of his vision, and, you know, he's got to stop looking at only his primary receiver.
Right. Like I said, against the Redskins, he was moving, you know, throwing the ball downfield. He was not just locking into his first option. He was getting outside the pocket a little bit, and he played a lot better. Now, is that because he got a lot better, or is it because the Redskins are horrible? Or is it a combination of both? I don't know. And then the Vikings, he gets hurt on, like, the second play, so, you know, you don't know how he's going to play in that game. He went to practice yesterday, but you wonder, can he run? Can he do anything with a shoulder like that that's hanging on by a thread, even though it's his non-throwing shoulder? I don't know.
And is he going to wear a harness? Does he need to wear a harness to keep it in place?
He'll wear something.
And that'll affect his mobility. That'll affect his throwing motion, even though it's on the other shoulder.
You would think.
But whenever you put these guys in, it seems, it always used to happen to me, Brendan, if I had a sore knee or something, either the first ball would hit you in the knee, or something. I'm thinking maybe Hicks's elbow got dislocated because his knee was hurt. You know, I mean,
that's possible. Mm-hmm. And then this week they're deciding whether or not they're going to put Hicks on IR, which would be a huge loss.
Yeah.
Oh, for the knee or for the elbow?
For the elbow.
For the elbow.
That was a gruesome hit.
Yeah, and it.
I thought it was snapped.
I thought it definitely dislocated, and there could have been tears in there. I don't know. I don't know if they're going to announce that this week or if they're going to wait.
Whenever you dislocate anything, you've got a ligament problem, because it wouldn't have come out if you didn't stretch one where it wasn't supposed to be stretched.
Right. No, that's true.
You're lucky if they all just stretch in unison, and then they're just sore for 6 weeks. You know, but you're. And there isn't a tear, but there's got to be damage, or it wouldn't have come out of the socket, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
It doesn't come out normally.
Mm-hmm.
But if he's out for the year, they got a problem.
But this week the Saints come into town. Still no Drew Brees, but they haven't missed a beat without Drew Brees.
No, is the IR? He doesn't have to be out for the whole year, right?
There's
seven games.
It's something like it's seven or eight. I'll find out. But yeah, it's a majority of the year. But you can go on IR, or maybe there's two levels to IR.
Two levels.
But there is an IR where you can still return.
Mm-hmm. Okay, because I would doubt that it's a 12-week comeback. I mean, I'm guessing it's a 6 to 8 week comeback for Hicks.
Yeah. So players on IR who return must be on IR for 8 weeks from the time they go on it to the time they return to play.
Can they do that retroactively? Can they?
No, like baseball.
It says from the time they go on it.
Okay.
Baseball, you can
6 weeks before they can return to practice, 8 weeks before they can return to games.
Now, baseball, can you only do that if the guy hadn't played many?
It also says each team can bring two players off IR later in the year. and that's it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was aware of that, too, that there was a limit as to how many guys. Because when they put a guy on IR before the season begins, there's always a hope that by the 10th or 11th game that they'll be able to. But then the risk is, do you want to bring that guy back? Or because there's a limit as to how many you can bring back.
Yeah, so you can only bring back two. The interesting thing is they used to have a rule that you actually had to designate if they're going to be eligible for a return or not at the outset of the injury. Now you don't have to do that anymore.
So they're saying that Kyle Long is more than 8 weeks away of being okay. Wow.
Correct.
With no surgery. That's strange.
Yeah, and, you know, we just completed week six, right?
Yeah.
So, you're already heading into week seven. 8 weeks away is week 15. I mean, you know, there wouldn't be that much season left anyway.
Well, you get to 2 weeks this week, so 14.
Yeah.
Which means if you're a playoff team, three games in the playoffs. I mean, if you can get Hicks for that, you want it.
Oh, yeah, mm-hmm. I agree.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
They'll need Hicks for sure. And then they get Taylor Gabriel back this week, which I think they missed him a lot. He, mm-hmm. you know, had the 3-touchdown game against the Redskins and was all over the field in that game. And then he got a concussion at the very end of that game. And he's missed the last two games and then the bye week. But he'll be back this week. And they definitely need him, too.
It was an interesting interview with Aaron Rodgers last night because one of their ends was out and somebody else got hurt, quad problem. It didn't look like he was, you know, destroyed or anything. And so this third string guy came in and caught a bunch of passes. So at the end of the game, I think the lady at the field was interviewing him and says, "What about this guy?" And he goes, and Aaron Rodgers go, "No, I'm not really surprised." He says, "The guy is in every meeting taking down notes like he's a madman, knows the system. He's done nothing but work hard since he's been here. And on the practice field, I throw it to him, the guy never misses a route. Why would I think he'd screw up?" And he didn't. He had a good game, you know, because it was his day. It was his time, and he's prepared for it, and he came in and he had a nice game. He goes, why would I be shocked, he says to her.
Yeah, no, I agree.
And I'm sure there's guys like that around. I mean, I would just say that if I were to say on the offense on the Bears, their strength was the center and two guards. They were two
and
guys.
And they flipped one of the guards in the center. this year.
Well, no, it was Larson.
No, last year it was Whitehair was the guard, or was the center.
It was the center.
Yeah.
And he couldn't frickin' snap shotgun, mm-hmm. even though he was a good blocker. He couldn't snap shotgun. They drafted James Daniels out of Iowa.
Who was a center.
Second-round pick, who was a center. And then
they made him a guard.
And he was a guard last year. And then this year they put him to a center, which is what they drafted him for, and they moved Whitehair to guard. And then
where did this Larson guy come from? He was starting.
He's been around for a while. He was
starting, I thought.
No, I think he came in because of an injury a couple of weeks ago, and then he got hurt.
Oh, he came in for Long, and now both of those guys are up. But the left guard's still there. Whitehair's still playing.
Yes.
They're only down one spot, necessarily.
Yeah, but the other big problem is Leno. He's the most penalized guy in the league right now.
He's been horrible on the left side. And Ted Larson, the guy you're talking about, has been in the league for 10 years.
Yeah.
Played, drafted by the Patriots back in 2010, played for a couple different teams, and the Bears signed him in the offseason, this past offseason in March.
What sure seems to me that whatever they're doing, the amount of penalties and hands moving around and both the defensive ends versus the tackle and a tackle versus the defensive ends, there's a lot of flags on that going on out there.
Well, also false starts.
Yeah, well, from the way I understand it, no, correct me if I'm wrong, is the referee stands behind the quarterback, correct? And he pretty much watches all the roughing penalties and all that, and I think the one lineman that he watches is the left tackle. The head linesman who's on the other side of the ball at the edge of the field, I believe, watches the other tackle, and the umpire who's in the middle of the field watches the center and the guards and people in the middle of the defense. Is that correct?
I think that's right, yeah.
Yeah, but you didn't think I knew that, Matty.
I think that's dead on.
Yeah, now they've moved the umpire out of the middle of the field on first and second down. Where does he stand now?
I don't know. I'd have to look.
I don't know.
Because there have been issues of people running
into him. I thought
he was
still in the middle. He may be at a different depth.
You know what? They tried to move him out of there. Maybe they moved him back because they were getting run into and stuff. The umpire was the one spot that was dangerous as a ref because you're right in the middle of those crossing patterns and everything. Maybe they moved him someplace, and then I think they moved him back. Anyway, SP Futures still up 8, make that 775. NASDAQ Futures up 16. Brendan, I'm sorry I didn't give you the full answer on what is a war in Turkey between the... Now, is Turkey end up fighting? Now, are they buddies with the Russians? They're going to split Syria in half? The Turks are going to take the Kurdish part And they're going to give us side back the rest of it, or what are
well,
we doing?
Well, they're trying to build a buffer zone where the Kurds were. They're moving all the Kurds out and bringing in Turkish refugees to fill in that zone.
So what happens to the ISIS guys? They just busted out of jail. They're going to run back to Iraq and cause trouble, or are they going to stay in Syria?
Pretty much.
You know,
that's the danger.
Could we have a bigger, worse stew over there than we have?
Maybe. Don't forget, they'll all go to Europe.
What kind of crack was that? They'll all go to Europe.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how does that feel if you're in Europe? S&P Futures up 850, like we just said. Brennan, thank you. Maddie, thank you. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.